Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly. The satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Tony Hendra, and welcome to the Final Edition Radio Hour. As this Annus Horribilis Selectionis draws to its dreary close, we have a terrific show for you, which includes one last look at Hillary's painfully drab and uncriminal emails, our cast's opinions about matters of critical importance like the Cubs World Series win and California's possible legalization of marijuana, and the outrage of white people being racially profiled. Poor white people. Plus, the tragedy of Spinal Tap's lost millions. But most importantly, we're incredibly proud to announce our three-podcast series about the most important issue in this election, Men in Black, Disrobing the Supreme Court. It launched this week on the truly awesome subscription service, How. Here's the URL to check it out and get a 1 month free trial of How. http://hwl.fm, that's all in lowercase, /2F(B)U7C(K). Use the code MIB. That's MIB for Men in Black. And it's all in caps. Now, fasten your seatbelts, and away we go with the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Man on the street!
Republican women are revolting from the GOP because of charges against Donald Trump for sexual assault. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
I don't want a nice Republican man grabbing me by the pussy. I want them grabbing me from inside the uterus where they should be.
Well, you know why the Republicans are red? Because they're just embarrassed.
I think it's time for pussies to grab back.
You know, ever since Abraham Lincoln grabbed that pussy back in Gettysburg, this has been what the Republican Party is all about.
Somebody once asked Abraham Lincoln how long a woman's pussy should be. He said, long enough to touch the ground.
Look, let me just tell you right now that my father really respects women, and when he grabs my pussy, it's really respectful.
Thank you. Thank you, honey.
Dad, you never grab my pussy.
Tiffany!
Get out of here, Tiffany.
Everyone hates you!
Get out of here, Tiffany!
Go away!
If she weren't my daughter, I still wouldn't fuck her.
Buried in paper, drowning under email after email, a scandal cannot be quashed into silence. Finally, the truth is out. Now we know why Hillary Clinton deleted those emails. This is the truth. Number one, Hillary Clinton thinks LOL means lots of love.
So happy to hear that Daisy got into Harvard. LOL, Hillary.
It doesn't. Number two, Hillary Clinton spelled your without the apostrophe one time.
You're welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed the dinner. Love, H.
Let's play that one again, shall we?
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Doesn't that lack of apostrophe grate on your very soul? Number three, she confused James S. with James W.
Hey James, can I borrow your copy of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo since you finished with it? Oops, sorry, wrong James.
Wrong James? Wrong James? Are you seriously considering electing this woman president? Hillary Clinton deleted a $5 off voucher from West Elm because she's too in the pocket of big business to need the discount. Hillary Clinton got stuck on Caps Lock and shouted at her book club by mistake. Hillary Clinton sent Bill an eggplant emoji because she was planning on making a moussaka. And she must be stopped.
Wow, I loved the picture of Davis dressed as a pumpkin for Halloween. Thanks for sending.
That was thanks with an X. Can you even believe it? Now, finally, the truth is out. It's your choice, America. Over to you.
In central Iowa, two police officers were shot by a man known for displaying a Confederate flag. Since then, tensions have increased between police and white people. Jill Benson has that story.
Young white males say they are now being profiled by law enforcement after two officers were shot by a white man.
If you're a young white guy, you learn to be really careful around police. Like, you gotta drive under 60 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone, and you can't even call the police fucktards, which is totally a violation of my First Amendment. You know, a bunch of white guys in Oregon even went on trial for something or other. I mean, they got off, but still.
At the center of these tensions is a new stop-and-frisk policy. Police say they are only stopping and frisking in neighborhoods with the most guns. But critics point out that these always turn out to be white neighborhoods. Police Chief Manfred Mann defended the policy.
Sure, stop-and-frisk barely found any weapons in the black neighborhoods in Brooklyn, but it's turning up an amazing number of guns in Des Moines.
One neighbor who would not identify herself said she supports the profiling.
I know this is politically incorrect, but most crimes are committed by white guys.
That is so racist.
I will not shut up.
This is Jill Benson for the Final Edition.
Honey, I think we should walk on the other side of the street.
You're right, darling. There are a lot of ethnic people on this side, and who knows what they might do to us.
Oh, no, but the other sidewalk is closed. What do we do?
Follow me!
Non-racist man!
After a regular news reporter got bitten by a group of racially diverse protesters, he gained the powers of being the only person in town who doesn't believe in ethnic stereotypes. He is...
Non-racist man!
Will you help us pass these scary people?
They look different than us, so I'm afraid.
Sure thing, racist civilians. Let's go.
Yo, man, what are you doing in this side of town? You don't belong here.
Young African American, this town is equally ours as it is yours. Now go out there and get a high-paying job.
I already got one. Thanks, non-racist man.
Excuse me, do you need help troubleshooting your mobile device?
Oh no, it's a terrorist.
That's no terrorist, that's just someone of Indian descent. My friend, even though you hail from the second most populated country in the world, I don't see any difference between you and me.
I don't eat cows.
That was a close one.
Oh no, the worst race of all, gays.
Excuse me, but being gay is not a race.
Or a choice. Young lovers, we are just passing through. Please enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh no! They're trying to turn me gay!
That's not a thing any gays have the power to do.
No. What I'm saying is that I'm gay, and was just afraid to admit it.
Well, that explains a lot.
I'm going with these guys.
Bye!
Thanks for protecting me, non-racist man. Now, since my husband is gone, how about you and me get out of here?
No way. I might not be racist, but I know a terribly ignorant person when I see one.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in next week when non-racist man faces his hardest challenge yet.
The U.S. government.
Bartender, pour me some whiskey.
Coming right... Whoa, Donald?
Oh, hey, Billy Bush. You're bartending now?
Yes, the only gig I could get since NBC canned me. But it's not so bad. Sometimes girls dance on the bar, and I sneak a peek at their little bushes.
Terrific.
You okay, Donald?
Let's just say I don't feel like a winner today.
Having trouble with a lady?
Yeah, the United States of America. I moved on her like a bitch.
Whoa, the Donald score!
Shut up, Billy Bush! Just shut the hell up and let me tell my story!
Sorry.
Like I was saying, I moved on her like a bitch, but she wasn't interested. I even took her furniture shopping.
You took a country furniture shopping?
Yeah, I was gonna buy her a huge wall, but she even said no to that. I failed, I admit it. I think things started going downhill when I tried to grab her by the pussy.
You mean Florida?
Yeah, America's pussy. I spend too much time focusing on Florida. It's just too damn attractive down there. Whenever I see Florida, I just kiss. I can't help it. I kiss, 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 kiss. I just kiss. I've kissed every square inch of Florida, believe me.
It's a pretty hot state.
But I forgot to caress America's back.
Avoided California, huh?
And then I mess with Texas.
Anal play. Ooh, I like it.
Well, America didn't. And she dumped me for Crooked Hillary, who doesn't even know how to kiss.
Sorry, man. Hey, why don't you join me and Ryan Lochte down in Mexico this weekend?
Mexico? That would be like going back to Marla Maples. I want the United States. Now when I see her, she's totally changed her look. She's got these big, phony, progressive thoughts. She's a really bad person, Billy, and it hurts.
Whoa, I've never seen such a sensitive side to you, Donald.
I guess I'll just have to go back to my old standby, fucking my skyscrapers. Take care, Billy.
Be well, Donald. Hey, ladies, free shots if you dance on the bar for Bushy. Free shots!
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Man on the Street!
Chicago Cubs won the World Series for the first time in 108 years. The Final Edition asks the Man on the Street, what do you think?
Wow, that's a long time. They must be so old.
If it's not free helmet night, I'm not interested.
Well, the last time Indians were mauled by a bear wasn't really pretty.
I liked the second half of the game because they were all wet.
Wait, we're all flying the W because we're all wet, right?
It's not to think. The balls in the air and the audience, is that what they're called?
I'm going to let some of those Cubs slide into my home, if you know what I mean.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'm going to have an open house.
Oh. Well, can I come?
No.
This is bullshit, man. Chicago's not even in America.
I haven't gotten laid since the last time the Cubs won the World Series.
I missed the seventh inning stretch because I was at yoga.
Yeah. Yeah, go Cubs.
I don't know what happened. I like screaming.
Yeah.
Oh my God, wait, the Cubs and the Bears are both Chicago. I just got it.
Oh, being old is so boring.
I wish we had something fun to do.
I know. How about we play the game of life?
That's right. It's the Game of Life Senior Edition, the only board game for players age 60 and up.
Oh, I rolled four. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, move into an assisted living home. Pay $5,000.
My turn. Oh no, I landed on Watch All Your Friends Die.
The Game of Life Senior Edition is just like the normal game of life, except instead of dealing with things you did a long time ago, like getting married and having kids, we focus on those events in your golden years.
Heart and blame it on the baby. No one will question you. Jump ahead 2 spaces. It wasn't me.
Let go. Ooh, fall asleep during the Turner Classic Movie Marathon. Skip your next turn.
Aha, you're old.
You're old.
I know. Oh, my turn. Receive a call from your Garen kids, but you can't remember their names because of Alzheimer's. Go back three spaces. Wait, whose turn is it?
It's yours again, James.
My name isn't James, it's Samson.
It's hours and hours of old people fun, all in one box.
I have to get my diaper changed.
All right, my turn next.
No, I mean I actually have to get my diaper changed.
Gross. Oh, wait. I do too.
Uh-oh. Better call the hospice nurse. The Game of Life Senior Edition has everything, with spaces like this.
Newsflash, you're racist, but everyone has given you a pass because you're 86. Move ahead six spaces. Thanks, white people.
What are we doing again?
It's the Game of Life Senior Edition.
When does this end?
You win by landing on the death space.
I'm going again.
Oh, it's my turn. I want this suffering to be over.
Later, bring me another ham sandwich.
And once you win and go to heaven, you can play the game that never ends. Monopoly, Eternity Edition.
Hi, I'm Sheryl Sandberg, COO of Facebook and author of Lean In. Some people think that women in the workplace is a topic to be relegated to boardrooms and dorm rooms, but I'm here at the Westside Comedy Theater to tell you they're wrong. It's also appropriate for festive occasions like Halloween, or as I like to call it, Hollow-lean. If you think about it, there's no better occasion to practice leaning in than on the day when girls get asked for the very first time what I've always been asked on my first day in charge: what are you supposed to be? The answer, girls, is the boss. I don't care what costume you're wearing. Elsa from Frozen? She rules a country. Boss. Hermione Granger? She rules Harry Potter. Boss. Ballerina? Damn it, girls. Choreograph. Once you've exchanged pleasantries, remember to negotiate. With less societal pressure for them to stay thin, the boys will ask for more candy. You should too. But the negotiating starts well before your brother barters for a baby Ruth. Know what you want going into this meeting. It's harder to ask for a treat if you've already given them the option of a trick. Next, make your partner a real partner. Choosing whom to trick or treat with should not be taken lightly. Sure, he's cute and dressed like a Jonas brother, but is he okay alternating doorbell duty? Will he wait for you while you fix your shoelace? What happens if you can't see through your mask? Pick someone who will share speaking time, make room for your hand in the plastic pumpkin, and even agree to introduce one another. Nothing says I'm the boss like having your partner introduce you as Ballet Mistress in Chief of the Royal Ballet, London. Finally, don't leave before you leave. If the door is still open, your job as a trick-or-treater isn't done. Remember, your job is to entertain your neighbor in character. So as long as the door is open, stay in character. Don't look at your feet, count your candy, or start singing Lady Gaga songs. Unless you're dressed as Lady Gaga, which is an acceptable boss costume. As long as you follow these tips, you'll have a successful Halloween. Just remember, don't get caught up in the myth of doing it all. No one can hit every house. Even the homeowners have a bedtime. Done is better than perfect. And no one will know what your night was really like as long as you post a good picture to Facebook.
Hey, do you know when the next train arrives?
Excuse me?
Do you know when the next train is getting here?
Huh?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you not hear me?
I'm sorry. I can't hear you. I have bad eyes.
You have bad eyes?
Yep.
And because of your bad eyes, you can't hear me?
Correct.
That doesn't make any sense, and you just heard everything I just said.
What?
Hold on a second. Are we in a comedy sketch?
Huh. I can't hear...
Drop the bit. I think we're, like, in a comedy sketch.
What do you mean?
Like, someone wrote us into a script with an absurd premise in the hopes of getting laughter from the listener.
You mean like how I said I can't hear you because I have bad eyes?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a really contrived, unintelligent idea.
Yep. I think we're in a sketch.
Hey! Hey!
What are you doing?
Trying to get the writer's attention. Hey!
Well, it's too late. He already wrote the sketch, which is why we're now doing it.
But doesn't that mean he's writing these words right now as I speak?
Oh, I guess so.
So maybe I can get his attention and stop this before it goes on any longer. Hey, writer! Hey!
But if he's already writing these, then are we still saying the words that he wrote? And maybe he wrote for us to be self-aware in this sketch, knowing quite well that the premise was nonsensical.
Meaning that it's not really a bad premise at all, but satire on so-called bad comedy sketches.
Well, that's quite genius, actually.
Brilliant. Some of the best writing I've ever seen.
Wait, are we just saying it's good because he's writing us to say that, or do we actually believe that?
Good point. What do we actually know?
Well, I know your name is Frankie.
How? We've never said our names in this sketch.
But they're written in the script.
Aha! So our knowledge extends only to that of the writer, which means in actuality that we don't exist and are just one-dimensional characters created by this person.
What? No. I exist. I'm from St. Louis and have a wife and three kids that I love dearly.
You only knew that in the moment you said it. We didn't actually know any of that before, because the writer just added it in.
Okay, smart guy. What about you?
Well, I seems like I know nothing about myself. Hey, why didn't he give me any backstory?
Seems like my character's better than yours.
He's not. He's probably just being a lazy writer. Hey! Hey, writer! Give me a backstory!
Hey, guys, it's me, the writer. Did you just say something? I couldn't hear you. My eyes were closed.
Good one!
Oh, I see what you did. I see what you did with my eyes closed.
I'm Melissa Worthington for Alt Voices. We've been hearing a lot in this election cycle from people who get offended by a candidate's words, triggered by the statements of a candidate who speaks from the gut. In a country full of safe spaces for the elite, no one is telling the stories of the other side. So we went out into the communities and got the perspective our listeners deserve. Meet Joe from Virginia, who has been extremely impacted by these elections.
Thank you so much for having me on, Melissa. My story is a simple one. But this election has shaken me to my core. You're not the only one, FLOTUS. You see, like millions of other children in this country, my son has always had a deep affection for our past presidents. Every morning, I watch him wait for his mom to bring him his breakfast. And he looks at his favorite placemat with the presidents on it, and it makes him so happy. Right under his bacon, he sees the great history of this country. He can name them all and the years they were in office. Well, this worked until he was old enough to realize what year it was and that the placemat wasn't up to date. That we had specifically gone to the attic and found an old mat that stopped at Bush Jr. So we had to buy him a new one, which somehow the dog chewed up on the bottom right corner. But then he became unhappy because the dog had not offed that entire president, so what was the point? Well, what he didn't know about that long afternoon of peanut butter and doggy diarrhea, that was for his protection. So we got him another one, but before we put it out for him, we were once again able to protect his innocence with a steady hand and some whiteout. So he believed that the last president on his mat had an odd skin condition that made him look rather ghostly. But now, with these elections coming up, I just don't know what to do. If, heaven forbid, the she-devil gets into office, not only will my poor boy eat his Cheerios staring at a man named Hussein, but right next to him, a crooked criminal, a robotic, barely female supervillain. And that will change his world. You know, he came up to me the other day, and with his big blue eyes, wider than saucers, asked,
"Daddy, I heard at school, is it true that someone who looks like a gardener could be president someday? Like our cleaning lady, even?"
I didn't know what to say. Here he was, my sweet boy, who every morning looked at those presidential faces, thinking,
"Maybe someday I can be the next pale, manly face on this mat."
And now he's having to live in a world where just anybody could be president. And it nearly broke my heart. Because my boy went from feeling like he belonged to the most special group of people on earth to just being anybody. The bottom right corner of the mat, even. No drinking glass or napkin covering it like the left side of the mat. No, just the butter knife, barely even blocking the view of what could be a woman next to a black man. That's the real story, Melissa. The change they're all so eager to bring about. Crushing little boys' dreams across the nation.
Touching. Don't worry, Joe. If Hillary wins, we'll get your boy some hormone therapy. I'm Melissa Worthington for Alt Voices.
Welcome to Queedy's. May I take your order?
Yeah, I'll have a double burger and a medium Coke.
That'll be 1,000 calories.
What'd you say? How much do I owe you?
Nothing. It's just 1,000 calories.
I don't care. How much do I owe?
Oh, we don't charge money at Queedy's. We just tell you exactly what's in your food.
I'd rather just pay the money.
And you wanted a medium Coke?
Yeah, make it a large.
That'll be 65 grams of high fructose corn syrup and 1 gram of unidentified flavoring known as Merchandise 7X. Here's what's in the hamburger bun.
I don't want to know.
Azodicarbonamide, which is also used to make yoga mats and shoe rubber.
You done?
The hamburger is 30% fat and may contain camel.
I will pay you double if you just get me the food and don't tell me anything about it.
But it's free. Do you want fries? The fries contain sodium acid, pyrophosphate, and dimethyl pyrosol... I can't pronounce this, but they use it in silly putty.
Yes, I want the fries. I want a large fry.
You want a cookie?
You're fucking right, I want a cookie.
Now, the cookies have sodium bicarbonate, monocalcium phosphate, and sodium aluminum sulfate. It's just baking powder.
Look, I can't change what I eat, all right? I've had a long day driving a school bus, not turning around and killing some of the softer kids. And all I thought about the whole time was a burger. I don't want to think about other terrible crap that I can't control. So the only thing you're doing here is just making me feel bad. Just take my money. I prefer that to the information.
All right. I'm sorry. If that's how you want it. This is your credit card?
Yes.
Wells Fargo?
Yes. Why?
No reason.
We will be back right after this. Thank you so much.
Hi, welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Harry Shearer, legendary voiceover artist of The Simpsons, and more importantly, in my narrow little world, the equally legendary bassist, Derek Smalls of Spinal Tap, announced recently that he was suing Vivendi, the film giant that distributes our film, for $125 million for never paying the creators a cent of their share of the profits. This stunned fans of the movie, though not the movie world itself, which is quite accustomed to the criminality of film studios and producers when it comes to sharing the profits of someone else's work. But actually I, or rather Ian Faith, Tapp's manager, revealed this vile criminality in an interview we at the Final Edition ran on the occasion of Tap's 30th birthday, back in 2014. We thought it would be fun to rerun it.
And now for a special Final Edition Radio Hour interview. As most of our listeners probably know, this is the 30th anniversary of the release of the seminal film of our generation, or at least one very good movie, and that is This Is Spinal Tap. This Is Spinal Tap was a satire of the music industry, or perhaps it was more than that. We'll find out when we talk to Tony Hendra, who our listeners know as both the co-producer and co-star of the Final Edition Radio Hour, and as the man who played Sir Ian Faith, the band manager in Spinal Tap.
I don't think Ian has been knighted.
As just regular Ian Faith, a man who should have been knighted. Spinal Tap, to me, it was Spinal Tap, Monty Python, Holy Grail, and Animal House. Those are my three movies.
The Trinity.
Growing of comedy age, I guess it was. But, although Animal House always stuck in my mind more because there was a brief boob scene. But nonetheless, those were my comedy movies.
I would say that Animal House, it does fit in that in the Trinity,
sure.
Because it is actually it got a sort of bad rap in a way because it became seen as a gross out movie with toga parties thrown in.
It became people think of it as the frat movie, much like they think of Calvin and Hobbes as Calvin pissing on things when it's deeper.
Exactly. Sure. Yes, its reputation was determined by its imitators,
mm-hmm.
And actually, it was a very potent satire of further education in the United States. I mean, with Dean Wormer, who's essentially Nixon,
mm-hmm.
who screws around with the Constitution of Faber College, and the ROTC, which is essentially the military, and so forth and so on. So but all of that was kind of lost under the welter of food fights and toga parties.
But no, it obviously resonated for more than just a brief boob shot with me. As did Spinal Tap. I don't think there were any boob shots, but there was talk of greased up women on all fours, but
indeed.
Never any shots. Spinal Tap is in a short list of movies, I won't bother pretending to remember them, that has, I think, lasted sort of the test of its time. It's been 30 years, and I think it still resonates even with people that didn't experience sort of what it was perhaps on one level speaking to, which is sort of coming out of the 60s and into the 70s and into this the 80s looming sort of corporate era of music and everything and making fun of those types of bands, and yet people still relate to them even if they never knew any of those elements. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's actually for several reasons, but one of the reasons I'd like to discuss tonight a bit is one that isn't, I don't think, talked about very much, which is that Spinal Tap is on the sort of primary level a scathingly funny parody of the fecklessness and mindlessness of heavy metal. But on a deeper level, it seems to me, it is a satire. I mean, because it's a satire, actually, of an entire system, of the lifestyle, of its assumptions, its personnel, that helped to make the likes of Spinal Tap the cultural nadir it was. Or as one NYU cultural studies course taught by a very, very serious cultural studies professor called Andrew Ross once put it, Spinal Tap and the decline of Western civilization.
That was, now is that a cause and effect?
Well, yes, apparently, according to Andrew Ross, who is a Scot, by the way, and a very left-wing boy, left-wing Scot.
Was that, maybe you can tell me, is that because Spinal Tap finally said the emperor has no clothes, and
oh,
so everything fell
no.
apart?
I think Spinal Tap was the meme, maybe, or the trope, or the tropey meme, or the meme trope.
The Treme.
Yeah, the Treme.
The Treme, I think that was that movie.
So, anyway, so we have the parodies, obviously wonderfully carried off by the group itself, these lampoons of heavy metal's musical subgenres with all their kind of idiotic priapism. But obviously the lampoons, the parodies are brilliant. And
yeah.
they're brilliant not only because of their ridiculous sexual memes, but because of their pretension. I think it's one of the things that Spinal Tap caught wonderfully was the pretension of heavy metal. Christopher Guest's character, Nigel Tufnell, who is basically the most moronic of the three morons who front Tap, is also its most moronically pretentious with his wonderful work in progress, his trilogy in D minor, yes. which has the working title of "Lick My Love Pump."
His pretension is what led into the great, like, this one goes to 11 scene. It shattered his. He was professing such grand ambitions.
And of course, actually, Stonehenge is immensely pretentious too, mm-hmm. and it's kind of gone down in film history as. An epic stage fail, but really its lyrics and effects are just as funny because they perfectly embody that kind of awful, flaccid, Lord of the Rings-driven, Celtic, Nordic, Aryan race memory fantasies, you know, that heavy metal loves to wallow in.
Well, it fits in also to that thing that they have earlier about having all the appealing to all the male teenagers as their audience.
Right.
I forget if that was in the scene when he had the
ocean of retarded sexuality. But the thing is that surrounding these wonderful parodies is this kind of 360-degree satire of the industry which brought us rock and fed off it both while it was alive and well and when it was a fly-blown corpse. And basically, no rock, if you'll forgive the expression, is left unturned during Tap's pathetic journey. And all the slimy things under each one of them are given ample room to slime themselves into movie legend. You mentioned Fran Drescher, whose character name is Bobby Fleckman. Mm-hmm. And she has that wonderful sort of New York, whiny New York voice.
Perfect little publicist-ish type. I forget that was exactly her role. But.
I mean, she's certainly a part of the slime monument that is Polymer Records. And then there's Sir Dennis Eaton Hogg, of course, who is founder of Hogwood, which is a summer camp for pale young boys. And even Howard Hessman. I don't know if Howard Hessman played the Terry Ladd.
He was the manager of the other band, right, that they came across? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, in Memphis. And the star was Duke Fame. Mm. And Duke Fame had been one of the many, many members of Spinal Tap. And what was great about that scene was that Duke Fame is equally talentless. I mean, he's just as much a sort of bottom feeder as Tap is. But he happens to be on the upswing. So Howard Hessman won't let Spinal Tap touch him. And then he sort of gets out of an awkward situation.
How are you, laddie? Great to see you, Terry. Terrific to see you.
Liam.
Ian. Yes.
Yeah. But my favorite is Paul Schaefer's Artie Fufkin, mm-hmm. the A&R guy in Milwaukee or wherever it is. But he shows up at the record store and eventually, having tried to blame the owner of the record store for the fact that none of the public has shown up, actually blames himself in this marvelous burst of passive aggression and says,
I'm not asking, I'm telling with this. Kick my ass.
One of the reasons why there's never been a sequel or, in fact, an effective imitation of it is that it was very much of a certain moment. And I think everybody in the movie was sort of in some either superficial or profound way disappointed with rock and roll. And it was that moment where you still sort of could remember caring about it enough that you were actually disappointed. It's that totality of the picture, I think, that makes the movie so, so interesting. Everybody in the movie contributes to that sort of world. And in that way, I think it's a satire. I mean, I would say it's a satire comparable, at least in its scope and its success, to Dr. Strangelove, which mm-hmm. has the same kind of, it totally creates a world where logic is absent, completely absent.
So we're talking about slime balls. And I got to say, having now worked in entertainment some, if that's what I've been doing for the last million years, is your character resonates even more because you, as the band manager, have a unique sliminess that is sort of, you sort of have to tell lies to everybody in order to keep moving forward until, like, you can no longer lie anymore. When you sort of conceptualize your character, was liar part of the big one of the big words that drove it or
well what? I didn't really think about it very much until that's not quite true. I mean, I figured or modeled what I was going to do with this character on a guy called Andrew Lou Goldham, but he was the manager of the Rolling Stones, and he was very much, I mean, he was sort of a blonde, two-faced kind of fellow. And with a much more pucker, upper-class kind of accent than his Squatney East End of London charges.
Right.
So that seemed to be a fairly good model. But I must say, as soon as I started improvising, I remember it exactly. It was the scene at the beginning of the movie when they're in the limousine. And Ian is lying from the first time, the first moment he opens his mouth. He says the New York Times is going to do something, and then he says, well, we're not doing anything very much in New York because it's, you know, it's not worth it. But Philadelphia is a big rock town. It's just right from the start, he's making excuses for things before they happen.
One of the things I always thought was interesting about Ian's character is that he, like you said, he'll say, oh, the New York Times is going to do something, and then they sort of, he undercuts it. It struck me that he was the type that would always say something good, even if a second later it contradicted it. And in part, that was not just him lying, but him dealing with other characters, his charges, as you say, who are probably of the type of sociopath that only will hear the good things, that he kind of relied on being able to say, I'm going to give you $1 million. No, I'm not. And all they heard was, I'm going to give you $1 million, because want to believe the best about themselves.
Right, exactly. But one of my favorite scenes, actually, is the scene where Nigel is worried about the food, the backstage food.
Oh, yeah.
And Ian is very... He's very attentive, you know. It's not. He's not lying. He's actually trying to help poor moronic Nigel fold the meat around the bread in such a way that it might be edible. But then, you know, when Nigel starts getting worked up, he says, "I don't want you to ruin your performance," you know. And he means it. He means it. Nigel's all he has, you know, and he's all Nigel has. But you're right. You're right. Ian is a slime ball, and I did it brilliantly.
What do you think about Ian's role, or other people's role in the movie, as far as like the, sort of the corporatism of either looming corporatism of music or just in general? Because in a way, Ian, even though he's son of a slime ball, he is management. I mean, he's their manager, so he himself sort of has a corporate element.
That's what I'm saying, I think, is one of the reasons it has a kind of universal appeal and a continuing appeal, because as you say, those slime balls are still with us, and they're still screwing us, and they still run the show. And the fact is that the record company hovers sort of invisibly over the whole movie. It's not just in the occasional characters that show up from the record industry. I mean, and often Ian's job is simply to be the messenger of that. I mean, when he produces the Black Album, which doesn't even have their name on it, you know, and tries to enthuse about it, we're finally on our way, you know.
There is sort of this element of the corporation or the record company as God. Like, it's sort of Ian is struggling there and having to lie. But there's a sense that if the company really wanted to get behind it, they can make a star. I mean,
oh, they could make it into Duke fame overnight if they wanted to.
Right, yeah. And yet that doesn't happen. And
I go back to this, the idea that you've just expressed, because it came out like in the height of the Reagan years, right? I mean, it came out in 1984 when sort of unchained capitalism and greed is good, was really roaring, and the corporations had sort of almost overnight, from being the villains of the piece in the 60s and 70s, were now the heroes. But I think this might be one of the reasons, if I'm right, this might be one of the reasons why, and I can reveal this now on our show.
Reveal it.
That the principles of this incredibly successful movie, I mean, one thing you can say about it is that it's not only been pretty successful all over the English-speaking world, and indeed in parts of the non-English-speaking world, like Germany and France, all the money that presumably has been taken in by somebody, in fact by a number of corporations, more than half a dozen actually, over the 30 years, not one cent of that has been enjoyed by the principals of the movie. No profit participation, although all of us had contracts guaranteeing profit participation. Not one cent of that has been seen. So they got their revenge, the corporation.
That's kind of amazing. And you did have contracts that said you get back. I mean, I know, look, Hollywood reporting, quote unquote, is making sure that every expense just goes in lockstep with every piece of income. But that's kind of ridiculous.
The budget for this movie?
It was, what, like $12? I mean,
$4 million. Okay. Right. $4 million. It's probably one of the lowest budget, massive hit movies ever. And if... There comes a point where if a movie costs $4 million and it continues to make money for 30 years, there's going to be some profit there somewhere.
I do have a law degree, and I'm a member of the California Bar, but I don't think I'm going to be the best guy to take it.
I think we ought to go on as a sort of poor little Spinal Tap, you know, and go on Kickstarter and see if we can get enough money to really slap them. That's
well,
what you should do.
Would you raise money to fund a lawsuit, or would you just raise money to pay yourselves?
Because that's right. Why give it to the middleman? Yeah. Just don't call me Liam.
That was Tony Hendra who played Sir Ian. I keep saying Sir Ian. I want you to be a sir. Ian Faith in Spinal Tap, or This Is Spinal Tap, with not just some interesting artistic and creative insights, but also a legal bombshell. That's it.
Pull up your pants, we're back! It's the Final Edition Radio Hour!
Man on the street!
California is voting whether to legalize marijuana. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
It's not already legal?
I think pot's just a slippery slope to me killing hookers again.
Well, I don't know about you, but this school bake sale is going next level.
I mean, it is functionally legal at this point. Everyone can get a weed card.
Quite frankly, I don't think the government should make me lie about having glaucoma.
But will they be able to smoke pot in restaurants?
What kind of message are we sending if something that was once medicine is now recreational?
I love these Tums. Thanks for putting them out at the party.
Yeah, that's Prop 62.
Wait, so now I have to pretend that I haven't had back pain for years?
People don't know. Meth has a lot of medicinal purposes.
Yeah, you can make shoes out of meth, man.
Can I still text my dealer and meet him out back of my apartment, like, just to hang?
Personally, I'm just gonna go straight to the marijuana gum.
I'm going with the marijuana patch.
I'm so excited for the young people to start caring about raising plants again.
After the success of the Final Edition's album, Are There Any Triggers Here Tonight?, presented in conjunction with the National Lampoon, we at the Final Edition Radio Hour are on the brink of another ambitious, gut-busting project. A blistering three-podcast satirical series, not about sensitive emails and sensitive portions of a lady's anatomy, but about the truly important issue in this election, the Supreme Court. Here's an inside taste of what's to come in some outtakes we couldn't find a home for.
What happens when nine wacky Supreme Court justices share the bench and a big old house where they all live? Laughter happens on the new hit sitcom, Full Court. This week, the roomies debate how to break the news to little old Ruthie that her pal Antonin isn't coming back.
Hi, Steven. Hi, John. Hey, you guys. Where's Antonin?
Golly, John, how do we tell Ruthie that Scalia is D-E-A-D?
What? He's fucking dead.
Steven, we all have law degrees. Spelling isn't a good way of keeping secrets, D-U-M-M-Y. That's on this week's Full Court.
Aw, oh, I love you guys.
Aww. How about this? Is it cruel and unusual punishment if you're dressed as a chicken and shot out of a cannon?
Do you die?
Well, yeah.
Not cruel and unusual punishment.
Come on, they dress you like a chicken.
So?
They put a beak on your face, attach feathers to your body, make you wear chicken feet, make you squawk like a chicken, stuff your chicken body into a cannon, light a match, and shoot your chicken ass out to sea. That is very cruel and unusual punishment.
Do you die?
How could anyone survive that?
Then it's not punishment. It's only punishment if you survive, man.
Why?
Dudes, the objective of punishment is to reform. Okay, not to kill. Therefore, punishment can't be cruel and unusual if it was never punishment to begin with.
Fuck me. So the government can do whatever twisted shit it wants to you as long as it results in your death?
Bingo. I think you guys are finally getting it.
Well, how about this?
Wait. Before we go any further, does anyone need a re-up of angel dust?
Yeah, sure. Man.
Definitely. Okay, so how about this? They dress you like a little baby with a pacifier and everything. They tie you to a camel who then runs full speed for 3 straight weeks in the desert, dragging you behind it. Each night, you have to sing a love song to the camel. And if the camel doesn't like it, he spits on you. And depending on what color the spit is, that's how you know what your mom's maiden name was. And then if your mom was not a good person, you'll know because it'll make you break out in hives.
Do you die?
Yeah.
New on the Law Channel, Hillbilly Supreme Court Justice. We now join already in progress the oral argument of Robin C. Conrad on behalf of the petitioners in the death penalty case of the hapless city feller versus Dogpatch, Kentucky.
Bailiff Ziggurat, commence with the hollering.
All right, get off your smelly butts, Dricky, for a whoop your britches plum hard into marshmallows. The Honorable Chief Justice Zig Cooter up presides.
Thank you, Bailiff. Sit down, your behinds. Bailiff, please bring on the next case for my perusal.
Your Honor, counsel approaches.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. My name is Mr.
Well, what do we got here? Looks like we got ourselves a hapless city feller.
thank you, Your Honor, but actually, I'm counsel for the individual known as hapless city feller.
Yeah. You never should have come around these parts in this district. In this particular jurisdiction, I mean. That's what I'm talking about, basically. You get the gist.
Yes, Your Honor.
Court reporter, please read back the transcripts from your electronic spoken word recording device.
But, baby, I mean, Your Honor, you know I can't read.
Duly noted for the record. Proceed, counsel.
If I may please the court with my oral argument.
Excuse me?
May I please, Your Honor, present my oral argument?
Come again?
I wish to present you my oral
argument. I heard you saying oral 3 times. Court reporter, how many times did he say oral?
But, baby, you know I can't count.
Duly noted.
Your Honor, I'm here to present my argument against the constitutionality of the death penalty.
A great Jew dictator!
Shut your mouth!
Ow! Ow! Ow!
Shut your ugly hole. You're the shame of the family. Your mother must have laid with a possum, because you ain't no son of mine.
Ow! 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 Ow!
Right. So, counsel, how do you want to present your case again?
Orally.
That's it. Course adjourned while we take you yonder to the old dry creek bed to do whatnot in assorted hurtings upon your torso.
What? You're going to remand me to the old dry creek bed for torture?
Hell no. We're just going to take you yonder to the old dry creek bed to do whatnot in assorted hurtings upon your torso.
Objection. My God, you don't even know what remand means.
Objection sustained.
And I also object that the court reporter and bailiff are being played by the same actor.
But they are the same person. That's my son. And his son. Regardless, you still must be punished.
What's the punishment then?
You have the choice of a small fine or Chi-Chi.
What's the small fine?
Death.
What's Chi-Chi?
Don't worry about that. That's where we put you in a barrel and fuck you, light you on fire and roll you down a hill onto a big cactus, fuck you again. Then we rip out your intestines, which we then reuse as rope at the local parkour facility. Big hit with the tourists, then we fuck you again.
I object, Your Honor. The state of Kentucky outlawed Chi-Chi 5 years ago as cruel and unusual punishment in the case of the missionary versus the lost Amazon tribe.
I reckon you're right. The court rescinds the punishment known as Chi-Chi.
Thank goodness. Death is bad enough, but Chi-Chi would be unbearable.
Counsel, after much deliberating, I have reached my verdict. Your argument before me today was inspiring and eloquent. Your words have compelled this court to show mercy and compassion upon the accused by giving you as quick and painless an execution as medically possible using only the most modern and scientific methods available.
So death it is.
I reckon.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But first, Chi-Chi.
Oh, God, no!
Join us again next week on Hillbilly Supreme Court Justice to see what comes next on Zed Cooter's docket.
Who said docket in my court?
You know I can't read!
You know he can't read!
We're the same person!
Hello?
Yeah, are you Merrick Garland?
Yeah. Am I in the right place? I got a message saying I should meet Sam at the Supreme Court.
That's me, bud. Justice Sam Alito. But my friends call me Lido Deck. I'm kind of the Supreme Court's cruise director. Look, I know Congress is trying to hold you up until after the election, but we at the court have our own confirmation tradition.
Yeah, SCOTUS needs to get a crack at you first, if you know what we mean.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yeah, bitch. You're ours now.
I don't understand. Is this, like a hazing?
Let me see if I can explain it. The court rules on lots of stuff.
The court rules!
And you have to be familiar with lots of issues like...
the ice caps melting.
Oh, you just poured ice over my head.
Or deficit cuts.
Hey, you just cut my hair. Stop it.
Or what? You gonna snitch on us to Dean Obama?
Now you're gonna get it, Pledge. I'm your chief. I'm John Roberts. Dude, don't be a bork.
Borks get forks!
Ow! Where did you get a fork?
So, do you want to be part of SCOTUS House or not?
Do I want to be a justice? I do?
He does! The court rules!
Hi, are you new? I'm Elena.
Justice Kagan, stop it.
I was the new pledge last time. Hey, justices, let's make a mascot a lobbyist.
Ooh, let's make her perform a transvaginal ultrasound. Hashtag warn women. Hashtag that's what's up.
I know, let's make him hunt a person for sport.
We don't have time. We have to get ready for the toga kegger.
I can't believe the Supreme Court throws toga parties.
With these robes, every day is a toga party. Garland, do a keg stand. How do you feel?
The court rules?
The court rules! SCOTUS, SCOTUS! Oh no! Habeas corpus! I said SCOTUS, SCOTUS. Oh, baby, stare decisis. Yeah.
We're all gonna get laid.
Even me.
Woo!
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Keith Saltohanes, Samantha Gerwitz, Sean Ari Leher, Dan Frick, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Abby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, James Mount, Jessica Park, Kurt Weitzman, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. Credit to our writers at the Final Edition Radio Hour: Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lank, James Mount, Jessica Park, Kurt Weitzman, Leslie Shapira, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC. Copyright 2014.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.